and welcome to Sanditon Fancast. We're your hosts.
I'm Michelle. I usually live in the States, but right now I'm somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, nearing Guatemala, as a matter of fact. And you can find me at Musings on Instagram and Twitter.
I mean, your Instagram is lit right now, so worth the follow. I'm Rita. I live in England. I'm at Annoying Rita on Instagram and Twitter.
Hello again, and welcome back to our bonus postcards from Sanditon podcast. This is part one of a two-part extravaganza. We've received so many emails this week, we felt it would be better to split them into two podcasts for your sanity and, more importantly, ours. So, without further ado, let's begin our postcards from Sanditon.
You could just take the microphone out outside. Here's like the actual ocean.
My luck, I would drop my phone in the ocean, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, don't do that, actually.
That would be very bad. Hello, Rita and Michelle. Thank you for such an entertaining podcast. I've discovered y'all at the start of season 3 and listened to your episode breakdowns and postcards from North Carolina to Edinburgh to London, including a pilgrimage to Hampshire, and a visit to Jane Austen's house, and back. Wow! Therefore, y'all have become kindred spirits, and I can't tell you how many times you made me laugh out loud. Thank you for your time and effort. Moving on to the finale. I have to give the writers a 10 for bestowing Edward with a living in the church. Absolute irony and totally realistic for that time period. Many clergymen at that time ended up in that occupation because they were younger sons of the gentry or aristocratic class who could not inherit, or impoverished members of the gentry or aristocratic class forced to work. As members of either class, there were few occupations acceptable in the eyes of society for working, quote-unquote, the military or the clergy. Remember Pride and Prejudice, the vile Wickham said, "The church should have been his profession, as promised by Darcy Sr., and Lady Catherine bestowed the living near her estate on Mr. Collins. Lady Denham is cunning as a knife, and she stuck it to Edward by putting him in a place that would have been his worst nightmare, the church." Just imagine Esther's reaction when she hears the life he's been sentenced to. I imagine her laughter would be heard all the way to Sanditon. Did y'all note Edward was wearing a clergyman's robe at the time of the wedding? Which means he accepted the living. Yes. Do I hear desperate times calling for desperate measures? Mm-hmm. Yes. There were so many holes in the scenes in this final episode. One being the rapid statement, barely understandable, when Colborne tells Charlotte Lady Lydia has a secret engagement and therefore he is free to marry whoever he chooses. When did he ever get serious enough with Lydia to think that he was promised / committed to her first? That was ridiculous.
How did he know?
I know.
How did he know?
Yeah.
Maybe Leo told him. I don't know.
Leave it to Leo to do that. Okay, we continue.
Leave It to Leo would be a great name for a show, by the way. Her spinoff, where she solves crimes.
Yes. What is also ridiculous is that clifftop declaration, two weddings reception, and 1 year later look ahead took place in the last 5 minutes of the show, with essentially no dialogue after Colborne's declaration, which they didn't even give Charlotte any screen time to verbally respond to him. As y'all have said, too much going on and not enough screen time for the original central focus of the show. Little asterisk. Ever wonder how much film ended up on the cutting room floor? Yes!
We do.
Yes.
Every day. Mm-hmm. Keeps me up.
Also, where were Charlotte's parents? I did not see the camera pan over her family in the wedding and reception montage. That would never have happened at the time that a lady's family would not attend her wedding, even if not held at her home village. And we know she was on good terms with her father because she said he wrote to her after the Ralph breakup and was so understanding. Oh, well, it was still overall great entertainment for 3 seasons, even though 2 and 3 were really 1 season split in half and stretched out with a year in between. It would have felt a lot less hectic if it had played out in one season together. Finally, Rita, could you please explain the time frame over the course of 3 seasons? My overly analytic mind would greatly appreciate it. All the best, Janet from North Carolina.
Oh my god, are we sure we won? Okay, I'll do it as quickly as possible. So, let me think about this. So, season one was for sure set in 1819. I've definitely worked that out because it was the last year that the king was alive, the Mad King George. I assume the final episode of that took place at the very latest in August. Because Clara gave birth 9 months later, in the summer of 1820, that's when season two has to be. Mm-hmm. And I assume that's sometime in May. The king died at the beginning of the year, so we've got a new king. And I've realised that Charlotte must have been a governess for all of about 2 months, maybe 3 at a push, because season 3 is set in autumn, and Mary says it's barely autumn in episode 5. So I'm thinking like maybe September. So beginning of season 2, May. Beginning of season 3, September.
Okay.
Which is insane.
And how soon after the proposal would they have gotten married?
Well, the soonest would be 3 weeks because they have to read the bounds.
Yes. And I'm just thinking about what we saw in the wedding scene. It wasn't wintertime.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was basically a few weeks later.
Yeah. Because the season...
And it'd have to be because a year later she's has like a 7-month baby, which doesn't make sense.
Right, right.
Don't think about it too hard.
Yeah, okay.
Too
hard. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, there we go. I think we did it.
Did we? Question mark. At least I'm not having a breakdown about it. Okay.
That's a win.
I know. We're just hoping for no crying.
Yes.
Hello, Michelle and Rita. I can't believe this is the final Sanditon episode ever. I am happy for Hayborn. It was a beautiful ending, yet the first 2/3 of the episode was frustrating. This season, Charlotte's fiery spirit was gone. The writers were trying to make her more mature and cautious, but like Yol has pointed out, I'm sorry for the fact that I just said Yol like that, but you know, accent. That's only a few months between season 2 and 3. She wasn't as interesting like she was in the previous seasons. Georgiana telling Charlotte that Lydia is engaged to Colborne was disappointing because Charlotte wasn't willing to fight for him like Colborne did for her. That scene just fell flat. Charlotte was just boring this season. She got her happy ending, but it dragged out too long to get there. I loved the wedding dress. It was beautiful. Charlotte was glowing and happy. Her dress was beautiful, and her wedding ring was gorgeous. Did you look at the ring?
Yeah.
I did not look at the ring.
I saw it. It was huge.
Get it, sis?
Yes.
Colborne looked very handsome, and he looked like he almost shaved.
He almost shaved. No.
Augusta looked beautiful too in her bridesmaid's dress. I love Georgiana. Her character had the most growth over the 3 seasons. I was hoping that Georgiana didn't marry Otis because she is a strong character and she could be happy without having to get married. But this is Jane Austen and she had to get married. Loved that Lady Denham didn't marry.
Mm-hmm.
Happy for Arthur and Harry. Love them. Samuel and Lady Susan were the best dressed couple this episode. That's true.
Yes.
Yes. Mary survived.
It's like, that's enough said.
Leah was adorable. Yes. You know, Mary, she didn't die. That's a win.
Yeah.
Leah was adorable when she was trying to cheer up Augusta. Quack, quack.
Yes, that was cute.
The ending cliff scene reminded me of the ending of Mr. Malcolm's List. At the end of this movie, Mr. Malcolm got on his horse after he found out his true love, Julia, left his estate in a carriage and rode off to stop her and confess his love and propose marriage. Colborne did the same thing and got on his horse to stop Charlotte from leaving Sanditon and proposes making a life with him. This season, Sanditon had many Pride and Prejudice inspired scenes. When they did this, I felt like I was watching Pride and Prejudice and not Sanditon. I love Sanditon, but they could have come up with more original ideas for the characters. I truly enjoyed all your Sanditon podcasts.
I'm a fan and looking forward to hearing your Empress recap and your future Queen Charlotte podcast. Thank you for the Sanditon podcasts. Take care. And this is from Delia from Austin.
Ah, thanks, Delia.
Thanks, Delia. I totally get the, I felt like I was watching Pride and Prejudice and not Sanditon. Sometimes it was like the dialogue was
completely ripped off. Yes. Oh my gosh. Let's see. Rita, I hope Michelle is able to help you with emails this week, because I have a lot of words coming and I fear your ADHD brain right now, or fear for your ADHD brain right now.
Thank God. Thank God for you, Michelle. Thank you.
As far as finales go, this one was okay. I'm not happy with it, but I'm not raving about it either. It resolved stuff and made me smile, but it also had a lot of unnecessary stuff that lacked in substance and made me say, ugh. There were few too many overly contrived miscommunication hijinks for me. Amen, sister. Yes. I loved the slow motion ending of Charlotte walking through all the happy couples. That scene is a great final shot for the series, except it wasn't the final shot. But I feel it should have been.
Yes.
Yes. That would have been perfect.
I mid-sip and nearly snorted, like, out of my nose.
Oh my God, that would have been perfect. The 1 year later moment was a bit too Hallmark TV movie ending for me. Was that just to be able to show a cold-born baby? If so, I can accept that, totally. But the baby has blue eyes and both her parents are brown. Colonel Lennox hasn't been into town in the last 9 months, has he? Oh, shade! Shade! Oh my God. Next, I need to get this off my chest. We were freaking robbed. No kiss between Harry and Arthur? I'm totally disappointed in them for chickening out on that. I guess they were too busy inventing unnecessary plots for Susan instead of resolving Arthur and Harry properly. I know the boys couldn't have had a big old smooch on the public boardwalk or anything, but couldn't they have given us a nice private little scene with Harry and Arthur having a snuggle somewhere like they did for all the other couples? A pox on you, PBS. I curse you.
It's gotten Shakespearean in here.
I know. Other places I feel we were robbed. Arthur and Georgiana, after 2 seasons building this great bond between them, they get no scene together. Charlotte, she was robbed of her brain power, common sense, and courage. Lydia, how could they jip us out of the moment when she gets to tell her mother she's engaged? I wanted to see those fireworks, damn it. We didn't even get to see her at Charlotte's wedding with her husband. I mean, they managed a random woman for Edward to gawk at. Couldn't they have hired some hot guy to stand in as an extra, put him in a waistcoat and top hat, and let him stare lovingly at Lydia in slow motion for a few seconds? Damn you, PBS! What if it turned out he was a London architect named James? No, I don't think I'd like that.
She deserves better.
Yes.
He can barely string a sentence together, hon. Not for her.
Harry and Arthur, no hint of how they might resolve this. I think even the Hankins had more scenes than they did. The implication is that they are going to have a relationship and they're happy, but Harry is still a frickin' duke, and they're gay men in a society that doesn't allow them to be in an open relationship with each other. He has to marry and have an heir. Maybe the writers just couldn't think of a plausible future for them. That would be satisfying enough, so they decided to ignore the details and let us dream? Well, you know what? This is Michelle. He didn't have to have an heir.
I'm sure he has some ghastly cousin
exactly.
that can take on the title for
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Or he could just let the title die. God, that would be just the perfect revenge on his mother.
That would be perfect.
Oh, God. I'm so mean. Okay.
But he needs to make that active choice. I think it's annoying just
yes.
to be like, shrug, who cares?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Okay, back to the letter. Georgiana doesn't get a proper wedding? Not cool. Why did they have to do such a rushed wedding where she had none of her people there with her? I'm so baffled and annoyed by this. Doesn't she deserve even a small wedding with her adopted Parker family there to be happy for her?
Yeah.
It's just her mom.
At least Arthur.
Yeah.
At least Arthur.
Yes. It's just her mom, whom she's known for a week, and Otis's facial hair, which looks awful in profile. Arthur should have been there to walk her down the aisle. Yes.
Yes.
Charlotte to be a bridesmaid and Mary to fuss over her.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Here are some super random observations before I get all analytical. Alexander did not shave for his wedding. To the listener that wrote last week about his stubble, I am with you. He also wore an awful lot of blush at the wedding to go with that stubble. What were the makeup artists thinking? Samuel was extremely sexy with that touch of silver in his hair. Plus, that teal waistcoat he was wearing brings out his eyes. He should never take it off. Was it a wardrobe choice to make it match Susan's dress at Lady D's failed wedding? If so, good call. In the slow motion wedding couples montage, I love that Harry, Arthur, Georgiana, and Otis are all standing together and that they all look happy. Even if it is Otis. Ugh. Georgiana needs to have a long and close friendship with Harry and Arthur. They are pretty much family at this point. I would agree. In my imaginings of what the future holds, I see Uncle Arthur being the most beloved of uncles to all of Georgiana's children, and Uncle Arthur and Uncle Harry visiting the Molyneux home frequently. Conveniently always at the same time, with conveniently adjoining bedroom doors. white wedding dresses. At least Lady D didn't wear a white dress, but every other character did. Have you recovered yet, Rita?
Never. I will never let this go.
The scene with Alex.
On my deathbed, be complaining.
Yes! The white wedding dresses! Okay, we continue. The scene with Arthur stopping Charlotte's carriage off the cliff was clearly meant to mirror Sydney stopping Charlotte's carriage at the end of season one. Why do they have to so blatantly rip off Pride and Prejudice in every pivotal scene between Charlotte and Alexander? You have bewitched me. Come on, that whole scene is complete plagiarism. Wow, Mary really recovered fast from being on death's door. Geez, I'm probably younger than Mary, and if I get a sniffle, I'm a mess for at least a week. She was up within a day like nothing had happened. Uh-huh. Either the budget for extras in this episode must have been low, or Otis is not a very convincing leader, because at his meeting, there are literally six people in attendance. Oh, Georgiana, why? Why are you hitching your wagon to this star? When Georgiana confronts Lady Montrose in the tea room and Harry follows her out, how does he beat her out to the lobby so that he's standing there waiting for her? They went out the same door, and he left at least a few seconds after she did, because he had to give his mom a frowny face first. Does he own a teleportation device? If so, that would make it a lot easier for him and Arthur.
Ooh, I think she went to get her coat from the coat room.
Okay. Loved seeing Augustus smiling and happy at the end during the wedding reception. She deserves it. And look, there is actually a young man in Sanditon. I think that woman Edward is making eyes at during the ending should run like hell.
Yeah.
Loved seeing... yeah. Loved seeing Ms. Hankins tell her brother he's being a dink. But I keep forgetting that this storyline exists. I'm glad they didn't take up much screen time, but I'm happy they resolved it. Lydia asking Georgiana to be kind to Harry, warning her about Lady Montrose, was sweet. Georgiana assuming Lydia was engaged to Xander was just dumb. Why would that engagement require Lydia's swearing Georgiana to secrecy? Use your head, Georgiana. Lady M would be shouting it from the rooftops if it was Lydia and Colborne. Arthur calling Harry, dear man, made me squeal. Oh my god, that was so sweet. I loved that yet again, Harry and Arthur just straight up communicate without pretense. Tom is annoyingly smug and pompous when he confronts Rowley. You haven't earned the right to have that much swagger over this, Tom. Yes. All right, randomness aside, here comes the overly analytical part of this email. On the theme of Georgiana and her best friends, I find it really interesting that in all the promotional media and in the show, they keep talking about Charlotte and Georgiana as the best of friends. But if you look at their interactions throughout season 2 and 3, they don't really have many critical best friend moments. Georgiana has more meaningful interactions and BFF moments with Arthur. Regardless, neither of her BFFs were at her wedding. That really, 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 really bugs me. Lydia.
She doesn't need friends. She has her mommy.
Yes. Lydia, I knew it. Her mysterious bow reappears. They've gone telegraphing that all season. I like it, but wish we'd gotten some minor details on him, at least a name or occupation. All the times in this episode where they tried to make you think it was Colborn and Lydia, that Colborn and Lydia were together, it was blatantly obvious that they weren't. It was pretty clunky. I wish she'd been in this episode more. I missed her and missed having a good brother-sister scene between her and Harry over her engagement and his freedom. Charlotte and Colborn, they will never be the thing that brings me back to watch this season again. I thought the actors were great, but the writing of their romance was a flop for me. I know they were trying to recreate the Eliza-Sydney-Charlotte tension from the end of season one with Ralph and Lydia, but it didn't work for me. There was never really any fear that they wouldn't be together at the end, so it felt forced. I didn't believe they'd be separated by anything except their own foolishness. That said, I'm glad Lydia didn't end up with a broken heart, because them stomping on Ralph's heart was more than enough. Charlotte, good lord, does she give up easily? She goes all the way to Xander's place, specifically to declare her love and say the engagement's off. After weeks of torture and longing and her worrying over Lydia and supposedly learning her lesson by watching Tom cry over Mary, she gets out there, he's out riding, and she's like, okay, well, I guess I'll go home then. We'll have this critical conversation about our future at Lady D's wedding in a room full of other people where we can't be private or anything.
Yeah.
What the? She even had the perfect excuse to hang around his place and wait by saying she was checking in on Augusta. Also, Samuel, the terrible matchmaker, doesn't even invite her to stay for tea to try and throw them together. That persuasion misunderstanding plot was stupid with a capital S. They should have just gotten them together early in the episode and let us enjoy it. But no, we're back to the awkward non-conversations between them. I can see a long future ahead of them with never communicating, always making bad assumptions, staring mutely at each other, and their children and servants having to help them manage their lives because they are incapable of doing it for themselves. Whew. Samuel and Susan will be there saying they are going to help them solve their issues, but never actually do anything to help them solve an issue. Now, we did have Samuel solve things by rushing to Xander and telling him that Charlotte was leaving. So yeah. He did do that, but the rest of it is pretty sad. Okay.
Just can people talk?
Yeah, just talk. Yes. Yeah. It's so funny how we don't talk anymore. Anyway. As individual characters, I like them. I especially loved Alexander way more this season, with him becoming a better parental figure to Leo and Augusta and a more active member of the Sanditon community. I loved Alexander interacting with his brother and having so much more personality. But as a couple, they frustrate me to the point I can't enjoy them. And what a shock. Charlotte's father is disappointed but completely supportive of her marrying Ralph. Gee, I guess he wasn't such a villain after all. I think I sprained an eyeball rolling my eyes too hard over that one.
Yep.
How did that letter from her father get to Sanditon so fast? I'm confused by the timeline of this episode. Girl, we are too.
Don't think about it too
hard. Edward, three examples of him doing something kind of human is consistent to Lady D. But it was pretty funny that the living she promised ended up being her forcing him to get a job instead of just paying his bills. What makes her think having Edward be the moral compass for a community as part of the clergy is a good idea, though? I mean, Reverend Hankins isn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but at least he's not completely morally bankrupt. Harry and Arthur, so much to say here. No surprise, but theirs was the story that consistently held my interest more than any other this season. They are the reason I'll come back to this season again, and the characters I thought about most after each episode. They were refreshing, original, and their performances were exceptional. I love that we got a little bit of progression in each episode for them. They followed the arc of every great romance in a period drama from the meeting getting to know each other, the declaration, the heartache slash barrier, and then the reconciliation. But no kiss, damn you, PBS! They are so good together, soulmates. The lack of details and screen time for them was definitely disappointing to me, but I can fill in the blanks for myself. I think that Harry will have to marry, but I think it will be to someone he has an understanding with and can be friends with. Arthur won't be living on Harry's estate with him, but I don't think that their relationship will be a secret from Harry's future wife. Arthur's conscience would suffer too much, for there is not to be some honesty there. As long as the future wife isn't a person Arthur loves most in the world, as in, it's not Georgiana, I think Arthur will come around to the realization that Harry is worth the compromise, and they will make it work. He has to get his money's worth on the book about the Wye River, after all. Hey, do you know who's free? Sydney's widow, Eliza. She married for money before. I bet she'd be all over a title and would be quite content to look the other way. She can still pop out an heir and bankroll Harry's estate as long as Tom hasn't used up all of her money on the town yet.
That's my one fear. She got to be broke by
now.
Yeah,
pretty much. Georgiana, she surpassed Charlotte by leaps and bounds as probably the most interesting central heroine. I really loved her, and she is gorgeous. Her hair and makeup artist is knocking it out of the park. Even if she did end up going back to Otis, it's as a more mature character that is much wiser and sees his flaws as well as the things about him that she loves. I think that gives them a better chance than they would have had if they'd ended up together in season one. Of course. But she just won't be another Mary, constantly being taken in by her husband's bullshit. Hell no. Georgiana's mother. I think they mishandled the story. It took too long for them to come together and had too many distractions, especially in this final episode. Cramming it into episode 5 and then sending Agnes off screen for half the episode 6 didn't work for me. Georgiana's doubts and resolution were too rushed as a result, making it hard to buy into. Plus, didn't Agnes just say at dinner that now she has found Georgiana, she doesn't want to let her out of her sight? Literally, the next day, while Georgiana is at Mary's bedside, she runs off to London and doesn't even tell Georgiana in person. She leaves a random note that is so bloody contrived. I also don't like that she brought Georgiana to Otis and separated her from all her friends in Sanditon. It felt kind of controlling. She doesn't know Georgiana yet. I don't think they were going for her being controlling, but I think they were just out of time because they had too many plots going on, and it all felt so odd. Honestly, you know, Otis should have brought his ass to Sanditon, you know?
Yeah, wouldn't it have made more sense for her to go, Otis, come to Sanditon?
Yes, you know, with her saying...
Why were they going off to London?
Yeah, with her saying, you know, I know someone who is, you know, and then have Otis walk in the room, and, you know, that kind of... Okay.
This is also part of why I was like, oh, this feels like some kind of con that he's inflicting on her.
Yes.
Where he lures her away from all of her support network.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But,
you know.
Rita and Michelle, I loved what you had to say last week about Agnes being too naive. I think you pinned down what I couldn't put my finger on and what it was that made me feel unsettled about her last week. She was too doe-eyed for her life experience, so it didn't feel legit and made me distrust the character. The Montroses. They were the best new addition to the show this year. I totally agree. They were great. Lady Montrose is definitely the best type of villain. She's not the mustache-twirling evil character like Colonel Lennox from season 2. She's much more dangerous, a layered type of character that you could understand even if you didn't always like her. We missed the final showdown where both her kids go their own ways in defiance of her, though, and that was a travesty. That would have been way more interesting than another lame-ass, thrown-away plot about Susan getting back together with the king. Samuel and Susan. What was that? Why do we need to do a failed proposal trope here? I love them, but this was such a waste of time. Plus, they are really terrible matchmakers. They talked a lot about making matches, and then they didn't actually do any matchmaking except for themselves. 19 minutes into the episode, Charlotte is confiding on the beach to Lady Susan that she's going to speak to Alexander at the wedding, hoping his feelings towards her hasn't changed. Samuel knows his brother is in love with Charlotte, yet they both just blandly accept that it's useless to try to get them together. Nobody thinks to tell Xander she's not going to marry Ralph now. Terrible matchmakers. Also, they didn't create any of the situations that threw Xander and Charlotte together. They were just commenting on it, saying, I hope this forces them to talk. I enjoyed the introduction of Samuel because I liked him as a balance to Alexander. I loved their brotherly interactions and his uncle moments with Leo and Augusta, but he did not need a romance. It would have been more than enough to have Samuel be there as Alexander's brother. Susan, the actress is lovely, but there was no need for this character to return. She wasn't pivotal enough in season one to warrant this much attention in the final season. She really did nothing here except to pursue her own romance. Lady D and Rowley, same thing. It was just a distraction. Every time they were on, I kept thinking, get back to the other storylines. Yes. That said, I liked that he did not end up being a scammer. He's just a crotchety old jerk. I guess him being Mary, him being her aging boy toy is better than him just abandoning her or her marrying him, but I didn't really need any of this. Now, before I end, I would just like to say thanks to you two ladies for all the work you've put in. Without your podcast, I don't think I'd have enjoyed this show nearly as much as I did. When I watched season one back in 2019, I did not like it at all. I thought it was trash. My mind has since changed, but that's in large part due to how much I enjoyed your discussions of the episodes and the sense of humor you have. Thanks for everything, and now take a breather and relax. Tara. Thank you, Tara. Oh, Tara. Wow!
You are amazing. I love your email.
Yes.
But God, was that bloody long. Michelle, you were talking.
Oh, my God. I feel like I was talking forever. I drank all my water from this one can. So while you read the next one, I'm going to go rustle around the cabin and find another. So go for it.
Dear lovely ladies, I found out about your delightful podcast recently. 3 episodes into season 3. My bad. Sincere apologies for being late to this rather fun party. I've since listened to all back episodes and have thoroughly enjoyed your musings. I came to Sanditon in 2021. Like many, locked down and looking to escape our reality, the lure of a new Jane Austen period drama was more than I could bear. Naive and innocent, I embarked on a binge watch of season 1 and had my heart ripped out of my chest on that clifftop.
Yeah.
Still looked down and bereft, I convinced myself it could not have finished there and went a-googling, and a fandom drama befitting into Jane Austen-inspired work unfolded before my eyes. Oh, God. I've enjoyed season 2 and 3 immensely, and listening to your recap really has enhanced the experienced. You made me laugh, at times snortily, not a word, but I love that for you, reflect, agree, and profusely disagree at times. And I will never understand the Lockhart Georgiana ship you boarded. Nor do I most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, you just had to be.
Yeah.
Okay. I've chosen to suspend my disbelief for some of the show's dodgier plots and instead drink in the writing, costumes, music, and thoughtful performances. Or you could just drink during
the show. Yeah, there you go.
Probably helps it go down. Episode 6 has not yet aired down under. Tonight is the night. Hence, I have nothing witty, insightful, or intelligent to add to this conversation. I'm also saving you your episode 6 fan cast until I have watched the happy endings. Tell me there will be happy endings. Oh, so many.
Ah, yeah.
But I could not miss an opportunity to send you a postcard epistle, as I assume you will now be moving on to other shows. Just to say, thank you so much for doing what you do and giving this period drama tragic a heart space to indulge her love of Sanditon. Your end of the episode songs are usually a highlight in my day, and I still laugh whenever I think about the song at the end of the fancast episode 1-4 in season 1. I can't remember what I did.
Oh, what did I do? I don't know.
Now I'm going to have to go back and check.
Yeah.
That was 2020, my friend. Oh, that was too long ago. Before I sign off, just to mention, I've also listened to some of your non-Sanditon movie review podcasts. Thoroughly enjoyed enjoyable, and your enthusiasm is making me want to rewatch some of those films again.
Yay!
So, not at all annoying, Rita, and musings, Queen Michelle. Much heartfelt thanks and warm greetings from a seaside suburb in Sydney. Anne, not the Elliot one. Giggling Gertie on Twitter. Kiss. P.S. Rita, I too love Starstruck, if we're talking about the Rose Mateo show. And yes, I love that show. Michelle, watch that show. I think it's probably on Hulu. It's really good.
The show Starstruck? Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah. It's about like a regular girl who sleeps, has like a one night stand with a movie star, and then she wakes up the next morning and is like, oh my God, I know who you are. It's really funny.
Okay.
It's like a rom-com, but as a TV show. Okay. It's good.
I will watch.
Everyone watch.
Hi, Rita and hi, Michelle and Rita. Finally, episode 8. It came so quickly and everything seemed rushed, but I am happy for Charlotte and Alexander's happy ending. You guys predicted the overused engagement misunderstanding trope. At least they did not really prolong it too much, and I am just relieved that the SS Hayborn finally got together. I am also happy with Georgiana's storyline. It's so great that her mother was there to steer her back to Otis. I liked Otis and glad he is back this season. In my mind, he was not fully to blame for what happened to Georgiana in season 1. I believe that Georgiana ran away to get away from Sydney, and Otis didn't even know that she came back looking for him. Yes, he had a gambling habit and had debts, but I think Georgiana fell into the wrong hands and was quite shocked when Sydney and Charlotte told him that they were looking for Georgiana. He went away to work on himself and had intended to pay Sydney back, so I believe in his redemption.
I would have liked to have seen some of that redemption.
That would have been great. And I am happy that Georgiana and her mother are reunited. The casting for Agnes Harmon was perfect. Not only is she a wonderful actress, but she and Georgiana look like mother and daughter. A thought struck me while listening to your recap of episode 7, and you were discussing Lady Montrose's reaction to Agnes being a person of color. This thought is controversial, and I don't want to take any sides, but Lady Montrose's reaction would have been similar to how Meghan Markle was treated by the monarchy and the establishment around it. It is institutional and generational racism that we are still dealing with to this day, as you ladies have mentioned. Is it a coincidence that Lady Montrose's son, who is a duke, is named Harry? Oh, just saying. Oh, damn. I didn't even think about that. Thank you so much for all your work. Love you guys. What's next? Queen Charlotte? I can't wait. Your friend Maria from California. Thanks, Maria.
Thanks, Maria. Yeah, on to Queen Charlotte next.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, right away. Did that already come out?
It's out on the 4th.
Okay.
So in 5 days.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. I'm trying to muster up some enthusiasm, but it's really hard. I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Michelle and Rita. Alas, my last email, maybe, about the Sanderson series final. God, please don't keep emailing us about Sanderson after it's done. It will be very confusing. They did tie up all storylines from what I saw. Wasn't whiplashed, but I was checking the time between scenes, which seemed to be about 2 inches each. Do you mean 2 seconds?
Like maybe 2 seconds, two minutes, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. Thoughts. 1. Mary lives. No surprise. Tom doting hubby for now. Until the next clusterfuck. Yeah. 2. Glad Beatrice Hankins and Dr. Fuchs are an item. Reverend Hankins has a heart.
Uh-huh.
3. Glad we received the story about Lydia's secret engagement. If we had 8 episodes, maybe we could have learned more.
Mm-hmm.
Like who?
Yes.
Who? 4. It was nice to see hope for Harry and Arthur's relationship. We'll miss these characters. I loved having their storyline. I know there are folks who felt it was un-Austen-like. Neither was a handjob, sex on the floor at Lady D as Lady D was dying, nor Sydney walking out of the sea butt naked in front of Charlotte. Yep.
Uh-huh.
5. Georgiana's mother, Agnes, is a great character. I'm sorry we only had her in 2 episodes. Loved the scene where Georgiana lays against her mother when they're sitting on the couch. Such a warming scene. That she has found her mum and that comfort which she has never known. By the way, I've been wanting to mention the decor of that room, which was beautifully designed.
Great.
6. I know you are not happy about Otis being back and the marriage between Georgiana, but that scene in the church with the wedding vows between Georgiana and Otis, I thought it was gorgeous. The lighting and the cinematography was so intimate. Yeah, a night wedding was kind of random.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
7. Bye, Lady Montrose. We hardly knew you.
Yes.
8. I was surprised by Price not having an ulterior motive with Lady D. So happy she remained single. Liked her kind words, in her own way, to Charlotte. Loved that she didn't want to be seen as a miser compared to Colborne, so she gives a donation to the town. 9. Edward as a clergyman? Ha 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 ha. 5 exclamation points. Why would he be invited to the wedding reception? Why was he there? Was it at Lady D's or Hayrick Park? I wasn't paying enough attention. I'm sorry. 10. Wasn't happy that Leon Augusta didn't have any or very little screen time and lines. Papa, papa threw me off because I thought Leo had been calling Xander father. Maybe you can do both. I do give credit for Leo's lines about love being ghastly. Also, Augusta saying in the final scene, after Leo and Dora say doctor, lawyer, she says writer. Gesture to Jane is how I interpreted that. Well, you know, Augusta also likes to write poetry.
Yes.
Maybe she's going to be a little authoress. That would be cute.
That'd be awesome.
11. Lady Susan and Sam. Sam Sue. Just love them. Her outfits were gorgeous. The blue outfit as she leaves Lady D's wedding. 12. Happy to see the bond between Xander and Sam grow. When Sam tells Xander that he's thinking about marriage and that the woman is extraordinary, Xander's response about being truly happy for Sam. 13. Just want to give kudos to the costume designers for the show. Such talent and creativity. 14. Charlotte and Xander. At last, I thought the ending was anticlimactic. Cliff wedding, year later scenes. But I preferred it I watched it another 2 times and I'm not as disappointed, but would have preferred more time to enjoy the union of Hayborn. I would have loved a longer cliff scene / proposal, a longer dialogue, but that wind was wicked. I was a bit distracted by the wind. Hair was whipping around. Concerned about wigs and bonnets blowing off. Read the Masterpiece article with Ben Lloyd Hughes. I guess during the filming they didn't know if their dialogue would be heard or if they would need to do the lines later. Apparently the sound person got the job done on site. The line Bewitched, at first I was like, come on, can we be original? But watching again, okay, I'll live with it. I think the best part of the scene on the cliff is as the carriage comes up, the camera brings in the mane of Hannibal. I gasped and cried when I saw that. I thought that was a brilliant way of showing Colborne was waiting there for her. I would have had the cameras stay on Hannibal a little longer. By the way, what happened to Luna not seen in the season?
Doggy, yes!
I miss Luna. I was spoiled with the kiss scene on the cliff in episode 4. That was passion. Uh-huh. Again, Ben Lloyd Hughes' article said that the kiss in episode 6 was different because they will have a lifetime of kisses. Plus, there was an intimacy coach that worked with the actors. The wedding was happy, joyful, what we have been waiting for. Wished for a shaved Colborne. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Elizabeth, North Carolina, agreeing on Colborne shaving. Forested. No Gillette back then. Lol. Wished for blue cornflowers.
Oh.
The reception was fine. Need to wrap this up with only minutes left. Another reason why there should have been 8 episodes. 1 year later scene, I know people were doing the math about her pregnancy and the size of the baby, etc. I didn't care about it. I cared that it was a blue-eyed baby. I get it. Charlotte and Xander could have the blue-eye recessive gene, but so wanted that brown-eyed baby. What I wished for the end of the episode, Charlotte calling Colborne Xander and Colborne calling Miss Hayward Charlotte, not Mrs. Colborne, would have loved a scene with the two of them casually dressed having a tea breakfast at Hayrick Park in the bedroom / terrace. I'd allow a Pride and Prejudice 2005 reference for this scene. No, I do not like that scene. No, that scene does not count to me.
Really?
Stupid.
Oh, dear.
That's the American ending does not count.
Oh, we may have to fight over that one, but...
No, that was pure nonsense. Jane would never approve. anyway, not the podcast. How did we not discuss this when we did the actual Pride and Prejudice? We might have just completely forgot. More time for their dialogue / staring at each other. I'll miss this show. I'd love to see a movie or follow up if Masterpiece listens to the Sanderson Sisterhood. We are lobbying for this. Hashtag save Leo.
Yes.
I will add my demands to Masterpiece. Please release all the deleted scenes / boobers / or give us an unedited episode. Again, thanking you both for this podcast. I found you earlier this year before season 3 started. Listen to your podcast for season 2. Thank you for making me laugh. Think, learn. I'm grateful. I know last week Rita answered a listener about watching Queen Charlotte. Will you be doing Tom Jones? I really want to do Tom Jones. It's only 4 episodes, Michelle.
We can do it. It's just, dang.
When?
Yeah.
Have you considered North and South? We've done North and South, haven't
we? Yeah.
I
think so.
But people seem to like it.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that too old now? No, it's never too old. You're never too old for
North. It's brilliant. It is brilliant.
I haven't seen Poldark, so I might try. Oh, Robin. Best wishes, Robin from Boston. Robin, warning you.
Everything after season 3 is...
I don't like season 3.
It's a challenge. I say everything after season 2 is a challenge. Season 1, delightful.
Everything after the 4th episode of season 1 is a challenge. Some of it's good. Some of it's good challenge, but most of it is bad.
Yes. Hello, ladies. It's been 3 days and I'm still in denial. My mind cannot accept that this 3-year-long journey is over. In general, I liked the final episode. Despite the few issues for which I will complain in a bit, it was a nice emotional conclusion to everyone's story. At the end of the day, most of the characters got something of an Austenian ending. None of this broken fairy tale nonsense, and I'm happy for it. Before I go into my rambling mode, please take into consideration that this time I stayed up until 5 a.m. to watch the finale live and make notes, and it undoubtedly added to my already very emotional state. I wish to talk about the storylines that got resolved in this episode, and for the sake of my sanity, I'll be doing them in chronological order. So, buckle up. Number 1, Tom and Mary. I've said it before. The fact that Tom didn't make the right choice himself is very worrisome. Yes, he always learns his lesson, only to forget it the moment things start getting a little better. It is not a matter of if, but rather when will he slip again. Perhaps it's intentional, and they want to follow another trope Jane Austen represented in some of her secondary characters, that some people really never change. Cough, Mr. Collins. Cough. Here's another example of said trope. There's another example of said trope, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Mary's miraculous awakening was a bit cringy to the point that I thought she was faking it the whole time.
Same.
Yes.
Like.
Maybe she needed a break from Tom, and who could blame her? But she did look so pretty without all the makeup on. I loved seeing the girl sleep next to her. The bond these three have created throughout the seasons made these moments genuinely touching. I get the message they try to give about marriage and how mutual respect is as important as love for the union to stay strong. All in all, Mary's growth was great. Our little entrepreneur's plan was to improve the living conditions for the townspeople, because of course it was. Number 2, Ms. Hankins, the Reverend and the Doctor. Already 30 minutes in for the second resolution to happen. My God, this episode needed better time management. This is a storyline that didn't have to get dragged into the last episode, but still, it was nice seeing Beatrice calling her brother out, giving us another strong female character in the process. That, quote, "Are you really afraid of your own company," end quote, must have struck a nerve for him to finally get his head out of his arse, and call doctor for two. I'm sorry, thank you. And call the doctor for tea. She was so happy, and they were even seated together at the wedding. Loved it. Next.
Cute.
Yes. Number 3, Lady Denham and Mr. Price. That man talked himself into getting dumped. When he said he waited half a century to own her. Oh, God, yes. Just ew. I personally, I think we could have been done with him after he stood up at the altar, but he came back offering a no strings attached and agreeing to Tom's initial plan. A little humiliation was what needed, I suppose. An unnecessary redemption, but fine, I guess. As for Lady D, while listing the things she would have lost to this marriage, she ends with her independence. Something she's been chastising Charlotte for from the very beginning. Oh, the irony. But that's why we love her. She expects women to act in a certain way, because this is a man's society, when she herself never follows through. I'm sure what she said is true. It must have been too hard won for her to become what she is, and by giving extent to being immune to said expectations, and good for her for not giving it up in the end. Number 4, Samuel and Lady Susan. Speaking of unnecessary things, did we really need all this drama on the last episode? We literally went from kissing at the beach to my booty call just texted, I'm leaving, to actually, never mind that, back to kissing? Why? Don't get me wrong. They did a great job of breaking our hearts and remending them. I mean, I've been shipping this from episode 3, of course. I enjoyed it. But why did it have to be in the last effing episode? Okay. Here I'll be interjecting my chronological order to talk about Lydia, and you'll get why. So, number 5. Quote, I have ways to preserve my autonomy, end quote. And of course she's engaged, because plot device, too many reasons to hate this. First of all, can we start asking for names before we go and break someone's heart? That goes to both Georgiana and Charlotte. Also, why would she keep an engagement with Colborne a secret from her mother? Georgiana, use your head. But aside from all this, what bothered me the most and my biggest complaint is you had Samuel right there, a brother sharing the last name and all. Let false rumor get out about Sam and Lady Susan. You've already established she's prone to gossip. And then have a broken telephone ensue until Charlotte hears of a Mr. Colborne's engagement. Add a flirty scene between Alexander and Lydia outside the church, and it still makes sense without creating new plot holes. But they made her
too. This is what I thought would happen. Yes. And I was saying this will happen, and then they picked a stupid away.
Yep.
They picked a dumb away.
But they made her too likable, therefore she had to have a happy ending too. Fine, I guess. I did notice that she and Lady Montrose were absent from the wedding, but Harry was there. Do we think she eloped? By the way, I made my little headcanon about Xander, about how Xander knew. She never says who she's going riding with. Her mother just assumes. But supposedly, she does have her own riding horse in Sanditon. She asked for one of Xander's and explained it was to go and meet the other guy. Anyway. Number 6. Edward. No, I can't believe I'm still talking about him either. He's the only other character I was referencing to who fits perfectly with the some people never really change trait. The look he gave that young lady at the wedding reception confirmed something I was thinking ever since episode 4. It is my belief that all through season 3, Edward has been playing the long game. Everything he did, including Augusta, was a plan to earn his freedom from Lady D and the living he was promised. The opportunity presented itself in a naive young girl for whom he was warned to keep his distance from, and he persuaded her to an elopement, fully aware he wasn't going to follow through with marriage, because getting caught was his plan all along. This way he could show some remorse and seem heartbroken when he lets her go because she deserves better. Perhaps he did catch genuine feelings along the way, who knows, but that will explain something. First, why he was seen by Mr. Hankins while running away with Augusta. He's far more calculating than that. He would have waited to make sure everyone left for the fireworks, but he didn't because he wanted the Guardian to be alerted. And second, why they went to Falmouth instead of Scotland right away. What do you guys think? Plausible?
Plausible.
Yeah.
But not in the text.
Yeah. Number 7, Arthur and the Duke. Quote, "You cannot regain something that was never lost," end quote. Them sitting next to each other during the wedding as one more couple was a brilliant way to show how the relationship is accepted from their community. I love them. Even though I wish Georgiana was the one to do it, I was glad Harry ended that engagement. Poor soul looked so miserable at the tea. But those two have built some good bases for a friendship to blossom, and the exchange, "You deserve to be loved, as do you, Harry," was very sweet. That was really sweet. Number 8, Georgiana. She felt she was being abandoned and immediately jumped back into her problem-avoiding tactic, this time attempting to fix everything with a title, even searching for validation from Lady Montrose during the dress fitting. Thankfully, it didn't last long. Agnes was back, and so was Georgiana's sassiness, throwing the money back accompanied with, "You have little enough to spare." Oh, the satisfaction. That was an awesome, awesome moment.
The shade.
Yes. As much as I tried to stay composed during the episode, watching her snuggle in her mother's arms hit me hard, and I started crying. As for Otis, I think they had Agnes being the one to reunite them because she's morally pure. She's a loving mother, standing to gain nothing and only wishing for her daughter's happiness. So if she says he's worthy of her, it must be true. I liked their private little ceremony with just the three of them. I won't lie, I was relieved because I was dreading the possibility of a double wedding. But she gave a big middle finger to society, choosing who she will marry and doing so in her own terms, away from everyone because they've already taken so much from her. I didn't read it as cowardice or shamefulness, but rather, that is mine and mine alone. I'm happy for her story. She kept her mother, she found her mother. She kept the money, she found her mother, and married the man she loved. You know,
Could have had Arthur there, though. I mean, the idea, I get she doesn't want a society wedding, but her friends, mm-hmm. who have supported her before her mother came along, just...
Yeah. Number 9, Charlotte and Colborne. The writers took every great attribute of an Austin man, they fused them together and gave us Alexander Colborne. In 2 seasons, he went from a distant to a caring guardian. From, quote, "Society asks that a woman be accomplished, not learned," end quote, to, quote, "It is vital that every young woman be learned as well as accomplished," end quote. And all of this because he listens. And the best part, he doesn't expect anything in return. Meanwhile, Charlotte, compassionate as ever, offers comfort to Tom, tries to urge Georgiana to put an end to her engagement, and pushes Samuel to eventually give a beautiful declaration. Her bond with the latter I found especially sweet. She seeks his company when witnessing the flirting between Xander and Lydia, because she knows from their earlier encounter he's hurting too. Her little mischievous smile when she sees him staring at Lady Susan when entering the church tells me that these two as in-laws will be a good team. We also get to see her spark one last time during the conversation with Lady Denham, and what a pivotal one it was. Even though in essentials two very different characters, they are very similar on how they value their free will, something Lady D fully recognizes. I loved that back and forth. And finally, in the last 10 minutes, the writers remembered whose story this is supposed to be, and boy, did they deliver. First, with just the poetically placed proposal, mutual understanding on those cliffs. Just as she thought she was about to relive what happened with Sydney, nothing could be of greater concern, and water started pouring down from my eyes. He didn't ask because he didn't have to. Everything in that scene was perfect, from the music, to Hannibal's head appearing on the corner of the screen, to the wind that was blowing all over the place, representing their freedom. A huge thank you to Ben Lloyd Hughes for probably freezing his butt off for us. Second, with the beautiful wedding and ceremony that followed, watching Charlotte walking through the room while the theme song played slowly in the background, greeting every person that has contributed to shaping her life was wholesome, except her family. Thirdly, with the after scene. The perfect ending. How appropriate it was for Charlotte to have the last words in the series. I don't care how cliche they might have sounded or if anyone found them cheesy. Choice was very much Jane Austen's tenet, and not just for her heroines, but for herself too. And at the end, Charlotte, like she said, found a way to live her life in her own terms, as a wife, as a mother, and as a teacher. Because Jane said it best, quote, her characters shall have, after a little trouble, all that they desire, end quote. I apologize for this long email. I had many thoughts and no one to listen. I will miss this series and I will miss your views on it. But now that I have found your company, I'm reluctant to let it go. I shall continue listening to your podcast, but I will stay away from emailing. Oh, you don't have to. Indeed, this is one especially I think I had my fair share. I wish you ladies all the best. And this is from KK in Cyprus. KK, please, you can continue to listen and send us emails as much as you want. We have enjoyed
everyone,
your company.
Keep writing in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We love it. But that's all from us for part one.
Mm-hmm.
Part one is already over an hour, guys. We'll be back soon with part two of your postcards. In the meantime, remember to follow us on In the Books Network. We're on Twitter and Instagram. And until next time, please stay safe. Bye.
Bye.